Universal Society this morning. My name is Barbara Park, and I'm the president of the society. And the kids are starting downstairs today with their spirit circle. And we have to thank Orange and Katrina for a very nice start to our program this morning. We've got a couple of things that are a little different this morning, and I hope you'll enjoy it. Let's see, we're going to start out with Rachel lighting the chair.
And my assistant, too, Mary. We are lighting the chalice to spread the light of our faith tradition in our district this year. Chalice lighters are people throughout the Central Midwest District who support specific growth projects during the year. Your participation would mean a great deal. If you would like to join with others here at Prairie, please be a chalice lighter, please talk to Mary and Nancy after the service. They'll be out in the lobby. And they'll be glad to answer your questions about the program, enroll you as a chalice lighter, and give you a special sticker for your name tag to show your support. And if anybody doesn't want last year's sticker and want a new one, which is smaller, they can get one. And now we'd like to read the names of those who gave last year. And if you would hold your applause for word three. Rick Owens, Arne Schroeder, Mary Mullen, Dick Press, myself, Shirley Grandrod, Pat Cotley, Barbara Carr, Arlie Birchler, Jennifer Parker, Ruth Calden, Rosemary Lester, Jack Dowling, Rachel Long, Marion Thompson, Jennifer Parker, Marilyn Peters, Rosemary Dorney, Nikki Brownberg, Dave Johnson, Anna Bansky, Pat Watson, Nancy Graham, and Warren Hagstrom. And we want to thank those people who gave.
Thanks, Rachel. The choir that was come studio, and we had planned out to sing. I picked this as a Christmas song. The name of it is Light One Little Candle. Well, it seems to then fit quite appropriately to the chalice lighters, Light One Little Candle. But also, we're losing our accompanist to a vacation trip. Me to vacation next week, so we thought, well, we better do this song earlier than I had planned. Fortunately, Rosemary's program this morning is on Christmas, so the film worked out. How it does.
Thank you.
So this was especially spectacular. Congratulations. Go ahead.
My father, who's 85, went in with a heart attack on a pacemaker on Friday afternoon. As of yesterday afternoon, his report was that he was feeling terrible, but we hope that that's the effects of the anesthesia and other things at this point.
I'm modeling myself after Anne Urbanski when I say this and ask for your support. I have a job interview on Wednesday at 8:30 for the state. I'll be interviewed by three people. So it was quite an extensive process, to get the interview. And so I just wanted to ask you if you could send me good energy, my way. So that's Wednesday, and it officially begins at 8:45.
I talked to Mike Sheehy this morning. He was here briefly, and his brother is here from near Ottawa, so they're out walking today rather than here. But he said he had some disquieting news. One was that the tumor is more rapidly growing than they had anticipated. So he's in a period between chemo, and it's coming back faster, so they may have to move the chemos closer together. And also that they can't recover his own bone marrow, which they sometimes do kind of bank the bone marrow and then do a very strong chemo and then put the bone marrow back. But they're going to test his brother to see if his would be compatible. So that's where they are. But and Nancy got him lots of information.
Sometimes when you're dealing with a lymphoma that's a more aggressive or a faster growing nature, sometimes actually the cure rate and survival rate might be higher than if you were dealing with a slower growing type of lymphoma. So there's a lot of different issues involved.
Right. You said last week the faster they grow, sometimes the harder they fall.
Right.
So we're hoping that that's the case. Other joys and sorrows.
I have feelings for Kathy, but I wasn't prepared. Kathy's mom passed away Friday morning. She was a fighter, but it was time, I think, for her to turn the switches off. She died very, very gracefully and like the person she always was.
Oh, we're sorry, Kathy. That was a long process.
Well, we had a circle dinner last night. It was great because now my house is clean for Christmas.
Okay, then we're going to turn the program over to Rose Marie.
Thank you.
Yeah, I always like to have a thing to hang on to, or lead into, or whatever. This is actually the program of enlightenment, chalice lighting the candle by the choir, and now I'm about to light some Christmas trees. Among other things. Part of my talk tonight, and this just as an aside, comes from a radio feature that I was asked to do in Germany about 10 years ago during my happy time as a freelance radio journalist. And those parts I translated into English, and as I was reworking this stuff, I realized it's really quite up to date now. I hope you think so too. We'll start with a quote, and there was in the radio program I had appropriate music in between segments, but of course this would take too long. We'll start with a quote, Rome, Italy, Christmas Day, 1824, a bright, lovely day. I was working in my cozy little studio, and how sweet was the thought that every line I drew would bring me closer to the return to my dear, beloved fatherland. No matter how attractive life here in Italy might be, there's nothing that makes up for the loss of our old, sacred, magnificent Christmas tradition. The diary writer was Ludwig Richter, a famous and beloved genre painter and graphic artist of romantic German Gemütlichkeit. And there's hardly a German even today who doesn't know his picture world of children and grandmas, cozy little rooms, and Christmas scenes. And I will ask you to pass around this book. It has a lot of Ludwig Richter illustrations in it, just so you get an idea of what this romantic Christmas looks like. This sacred, magnificent, traditional German Christmas in the mind of Ludwig Richter and many old-time Germans. What's it all about? About 40 years ago, I thought I knew. That was when I was new in the United States and was beginning to teach German. Christmas Eve in Germany, I told my students, well, you just can't imagine. Everything is so festive and still almost solemn. And most beautiful is the Christmas tree, because you see, that isn't lighted until Christmas Eve. Lighted, my students asked, startled. Well, the candles, I said, real candles we have on the tree. And that smells so good when you take some pine needles and stick them in the flame. The little Americans listened intently and a bit skeptically. But don't you have any accidents with those open flames and all that? Nah, I replied almost triumphantly. Not half as much as you hear with your electrical stuff. And incidentally, that's true. Of course, a Christmas tree with real candles and softly flickering lights, that is indeed a very festive and very precious experience. But actually, the classic ritual of the German Christmas Eve did not become the stereotypical festive ceremony of the urban middle class until the end of the 19th century. The ritual went like this, with few variations, and I still remember it. The tree is decorated by the parents, mostly without the children present. Behind closed doors, the parents prepare the Gabentisch, the table with Christmas presents. Father lights the candles on the tree, perhaps the little bell rings, and at last the kids may come in. Even one kid is just a one-child family. They risk a quick glance at the table with the presents, but first there's music if somebody plays an instrument. A Christmas song is sung, a poem or the biblical Christmas story is recited. Only then there's the run on the presents. A light meal follows, perhaps one attends a midnight service. In any case, outsiders, non-family members, are not invited. Harmony reigns even if only for a few hours. The family, the holy family, is a closed and exclusive circle. So how was it with the children in those olden or not so very old days? Well, if I may speak from my own experience, the wonder of a lighted tree, the element of surprise and awe at that was something very special and indeed unforgettable. But the German Weihnachtsmann, Knecht Ruprecht, the equivalent of Santa Claus, now that was, in my opinion, a rather dubious character. In fact, I hated him. He had a sack full of presents, to be sure, but he also carried a switch that he threatened to use. He hadn't been good. And one little story of my own childhood, when I was about five, I had very liberal parents, but when I was about five, I must have been quite mean at some point. And children would put the shoes outside of their doors on St. Nicholas Day, which is the 6th of December, expecting to have oranges and nuts and candy put in the shoes. And when I was about five, I opened the door, and there were my shoes, and there was a switch in it. And I was so horrified and so terrified, I screamed and cried. My parents never again mentioned Santa Claus to me. ever since then. So looking through one of the popular paperback anthologies that are printed every year at Christmas, and one of them I'm passing around here, was Christmas verses and little stories, old and new. I find a traditional Christmas poem from the turn of the century that was still widely known when I was a youngster. Knecht Ruprecht takes leave of the Christkind, the Christ child, on his way to earth, and he shows her his equipment. Quote, er sprach, die Rute, die ist hier, doch für die Kinder nur die schlechten. Wie trifft auf den Teil, den rechten? Christkindlein sprach, so ist es recht, so geh mit Gott, mein treuer Knecht. Roughly translated, that means, Santa tells the Christ child, I have a switch here that's only meant for the bad kids, and they will get it on their proper part. Christkindl says that's how it should be. Go with God, my faithful servant. It was the Franco-Prussian War of 1870-71 which culminated in the establishment of the Second Reich with the help of Bismarck, that played a role in making the Christmas tree into a genuine German festival, the festive symbol. In the war winter of 1870-71, the military leadership had little Christmas trees distributed in the military hospitals, in the military quarters, and even the trenches. And this evoked a wealth of emotions, homesickness, a longing for peace, national pride, they were winning the war, chauvinism, all of which became associated with the tree. And in any case, when the victorious soldiers returned home, they certainly helped spread the notion that there should be a shining Christmas tree, just like in the Kaiser's residences, which was always pictured in all of the newspapers, in every German home. And it was during this time of the Second Reich, with its economic and political success, that the Christmas tree became a symbol for German victory and German soul, as much as a Christian, as much a Christian as an Urdeutsch, that means essentially German, celebration. The next war, 1914-18, only intensified this notion. I quote from a newspaper, Christmas Eve, 1914. The world stands in the midst of the most horrifying, raging fire of war that has ever befallen humanity. And at this time, it is the German people, above all others, who have internalized true Christianity in innermost being. Not until 1918 were such Christmas heroics toned down a bit. But 1933, with the advent of the Nazi regime, they were at it again. Quote, a new Germany folds hands in Christmas prayer. Christmas has received back its original high meaning. It is the celebration of a new beginning, the celebration of a nation, a German celebration. And 6 years later, German soldiers once again spent Christmas at the Western Front. But back home, there was no one without a Christmas tree. An official notice, quote, Christmas trees have been standardized throughout the Reich into five classes, and producer prices are regulated uniformly for each class by the Reich's commissioner. Only the so-called Christmas trees used by British and American bomber pups that were dropped to light up their targets during the nightly bombing raid, those trees could not be standardized by the Reich. And in 1944, we were supposed to celebrate the Christmas of Strong Hearts, according to a last-ditch propaganda slogan. Editorials and speeches now urged the German people to shed all softness that used to abide in earlier days within this celebration of German soul and inwardness. A year later, it was finally over. And in the very harsh winter of 1945-46, which I remember very well, when there was hardly a piece of lumber to be found anywhere, we all stole benches and fences to build fires, a few people managed to build little pyramids and stick a little leftover piece of candle in there. And those tiny little Christmas trees were the real thing for the Christmas spirit. A few years later, I emigrated to the United States. Soon had my own family, began to teach German, and learned new Christmas The multicolored electric lights everywhere, the incessant Christmas music in the stores 4 or 5 weeks before Christmas already, that I didn't like at all. But everything seemed happier, more open, friendly. And especially on Christmas Eve, homes were open, even for strangers or newcomers like me. I wrote home about that. What? Strange people on Christmas Eve? An old girlfriend replied, obviously shocked. Almost 30 years later, I returned for a longer stay to Germany, and I stayed in Frankfurt to write my dissertation. And now everything seemed a bit strange to me. I had become the foreigner. Only Christmas. That seemed vaguely familiar in many ways. The Christmas trees were all aglow in electric light, if only in case of white. And the prefabricated Christmas mood began, just like back home, my other home, much too early. And of course, how else could those mountains of consumer goods be sold? And as for imaginative marketing, some of Frankfurt's huge department stores certainly could hold their own against any Macy's or iMagnon. To recreate the beloved romantic mood of Ludwig Richter paintings, for example, the Kaufhof had hired a real live grandma, replete with rocking chair, lace bonnet, and steel-rimmed glasses, to sit in the big display window and read aloud from children's books. Her voice was piped to the outside through loudspeakers, where scores of kids were listening entranced, noses pressed against the window pane. A German Christmas granny, seen from the outside looking in. Of course we have a Weihnachtsmann, Santa Claus in America. I know two of my German students. Santa Claus is his name. That comes from St. Nicholas. He's a fat one, really jolly and good-natured, and you can hear him coming by his resounding belly laugh. Ho, ho, ho. On Christmas Eve, he comes through the air of the greatest of ease on his elf-drawn sled, and he throws the presents down the chimney. Sure, sometimes he visits and asks the kids whether they've been good, but he winks at them when he does that. And it's switched now. We don't have anything like that. Meanwhile, he's even taken a wife, Mrs. Claus, but lately she's sort of disappeared from the scene. Actually, why not? Why shouldn't there be a Mrs. Claus? And what if a thought slowly spins into motion, takes off by itself? And I quote, it could have happened like this, 0 hour in the stable at Bethlehem, December 24th, shortly before midnight. In pain, Maria gives birth to her divine child without attending physician. And her innocent bridegroom calls out in amazement, Jesus, Maria. It's a girl. The poem continues. Had that happened, the eternal feminine would have taken the lead from the beginning. A woman would have saved us from our sins, and men, those crowns of creation, would have to rule the world, bereft of all signs of male pride, without clubs, swords, and rockets. Not your traditional Christmas story, but a thought-provoking alternative, no? The writer, incidentally, was a man, Peter Schutt. The poem was published in the 1980s, in another one of those annual Christmas anthologies entitled Holy Night, Everybody, a Nasty Medley. This was an alternative Christmas. In this book, too, Christmas Eve is observed from the outside. written by people, for people, who simply don't believe that 3 days of officially decreed harmony are enough. Because the essence of Christmas Eve, the idea of Christmas altogether, is too magnificent and too fragile to become buried under garbage dumps of consumer goods, sentimentality, and hypocrisy. And so the little book tells about the jobless young man in jail whose Christmas wish for heavenly peace, as in the song Silent Night, really means eternal peace, as in death. And there is satire, of course, there always is in Germany, as in the story of the prostitute, who John has asked her to decorate a little tree for him. He'll bring Christmas cookies and before she'll sing Silent Night. No, this is not a facetious polemic against Christmas as we know it today. But like my talk this morning, it was meant to create a bit of critical distance to the all-too-familiar that was so dear to Ludwig Richter, so that the core content, the essence of the celebration, can come into focus again. And that core has to do with Menschen, with human beings. Not just Germans, not just Americans, not just Christians. Sometimes one can focus better from a distance, from the outside. A few weeks ago, when I was still in Germany, I found in the Frankfurter Rundschau, a major newspaper in Frankfurt, a somewhat exasperated article about the executors, or should I say executioners, of Silent Night, who start their consumer madness long before the first Advent Sunday, and who on New Year's Day are poised at the starting line to be first to fill their display windows with Easter bunnies. Well, when I opened my mail upon returning to Madison, guess what I found in my copy of Mother Jones? A fine article by Bill McKibben, who has written about ecology and related matters, that made me think that in the case of Christmas, some Germans and some Americans both choose to be on the outside, trying to make subversive inroads. And I would like to end my irreverent reflections with some excerpts from this article. McKibben calls his article a modest proposal to destroy Western civilization as we know it. The $100 Christmas. Ooh. And I'll quote some part of it. Several years ago, a few of us in the Northern Conference of the United Methodist Church started a campaign for what we called $100 holidays. The church leadership voted to urge parishioners not to spend more than $100 per family on presents, to rely instead on simple homemade gifts and on presents of services, a back rub, stacking a cord of wood and the like. The $100 figure was a useful anchor against the constant seduction of the advertisers, a way to explain to children why they weren't getting everything on their list. So far, our daughter Sophie is fine at Christmas. It's worth mentioning, however, that we don't have television, and so she may not understand the degree of her impoverishment. This holiday idea may sound modest, and it is. And yet, at the same time, it's pretty radical. Christmas is, indeed, the bulwark of a nation's economy. Many businesses do one-third of their volume in the month just before December 25th. And so it hits a nerve to question whether it all makes sense. Whether we should celebrate the birth of a man who said we should give all to the poor by showering each other with motorized tie racks. But it's radical for another reason, too. If you believe that our consumer addiction represents our deepest problem, then Christmas is the nadir. On Christmas morning, consumption is made literally sacred. Here, under a tree with roots going far back into prehistory, next to a creche with the figure of the infant child of God, we press stuff on each other. Stuff that becomes powerfully connected in our heads to love, to family, and even to salvation. When we began the $100 campaign, merchants made it clear to us what a threatening idea it was, and one said,
that while our method had merit, it would do too much damage to business. And he was right, or at least not wrong. But we have to start somewhere if we are ever to climb down from the unsustainable height that we've reached. And Christmas might as well be it. When we first began to spread this idea about celebrating Christmas in a new way, we were earnest and sober. But as we continued our campaign, we found we weren't really interested in changing Christmas because we wanted fewer batteries. We wanted more joy. We felt cheated by the Christmases we were having, so rushed, so busy, so full of mercantile fantasy and catalog hype that we couldn't relax and enjoy the season. And last week, in the newspaper, in the State Journal exercise section, there was an article on certain exercises to relax during this hectic season. Our growing need to emphasize joy over guilt says a great deal about the chances for religious radicalism. At its truest, religion represents the one force in our society that can, or that could, postulate some goal other than accumulation. It could play a subversive role. Churches, mosques, and synagogues, I would add Unitarian fellowships, almost alone among our official institutions, could say, it's not the economy, stupid, it's your life. It's learning that there's some other center to the universe. Stop the major quoting here. He goes on just a little bit, but you get the idea. And he ends his article by saying, I know what we'll be doing Christmas morning. After we open our stockings and exchange our few homemade gifts, we'll go out for a hike. Following the advice of St. Francis of Assisi, who said that even the birds deserve to celebrate this happy day, we'll spread seeds hither and yon. And for one morning, the chickadees and the jays will have it easy. And then we'll head back inside to the warm and fragrant kitchen, start basting the turkey, shaping the rolls, mashing the potatoes. Some things are sacred. Okay, some things are sacred, but not for Tom Lehrer. In order to keep a balance between the serious and the not so serious, Davida is going to sing, play.
I probably have enough songs to see it. There's a row with nothing for that.
Thank you. In addition to the industry of Christmas that involves having you buy stuff to give to people to show you how much you love them, how much you love them, there's also the industry of stuff to make sure that everybody you know knows that you are into the Christmas spirit. Mm-hmm. So there's the Christmas decoration industry, which is like, I was out shopping yesterday, unfortunately, and here was all this stuff that was just decor items, and some of them were really cute, but it's like, how many thousands of people do nothing all year long but make these decorative items that, you know, whether they're little wooden Santas or, you know, elves or, you know, the whole bit. And there's all these people that's all they do all year long, is make stuff to decorate your house with.
as I always keep thinking, as there is a conversion industry possible after war, there could be a conversion industry possible with all this junk that's coming. So, I mean, I don't go near those stores anymore because the incessant music drives me out of my ears.
I was just thinking, you know, psychologically, we get the shortest days of the year, and so as everything gets darker and darker and colder, we created this massive festival to counteract it. And it reminds me of the counter phrase that, you know, February with only 28 days is supposedly the shortest month of the year. But psychologically, February is the longest month of the year because you had winter going on for 2 or 3 months and you don't have any big festival to believe at all. So February is sort of you're really mired in winter, for it just seems like it's been going on and on forever by the time you reach February. So it's actually the longest month of the year.
I'm going to follow up on what Anne said. I'll have to admit that I've been looking at them. I would be willing to bet that the bulk of Christmas decorations in the stores right now are made in China, which is terribly persecuting Christians. So let's talk that out. I think my
one of my fondest Christmas memories is, first of all, my family Christmas tree as a child, which had real candles. And secondly, plus water buckets. and being in Austria, where I was indeed invited into a family home on Christmas Day with the lit tree and the big, big table full of beautiful decorative Christmas breads, and that was wonderful. Yeah. And I long for the quiet Christmas without all the glitz. It was just
you
so
can have light and quiet, or
yeah, light
and
light,
all candle noise,
yeah, blaring.
Something that struck me this year, and I think I read it every year. This is the first time this has happened. I wonder for how many other people this is true. They publish a list of the top 10 most purchased items or most popular children's items. And for many, many years, things like Monopoly and Etch-a-Sketch and maybe a Barbie doll or whatever the current doll is, gnomes, elves, you know, one of those. But there are usually some recognizable things that are carryover. The other day I read a list, and not only did I have no idea what any of those things were. They were all electronic as far as I could ascertain, and they might have come off Mars as far as I was concerned. And that made me feel extremely strange. Apart, you know, so I'm old enough to be a grandmother, that makes sense, that things would seem less and less familiar to me every year. But this is a really sudden shift, and not one recognizable standard item there. And remembering the few electronic type toys that my kids had, how important they were at the moment and how quickly forgotten they were, I felt not only weird, but kind of sad. And I wonder if anybody else saw that list and had similar reactions.
You felt
well, no, it was so strange to have it change so thoroughly and to feel no. I mean, if I had to buy, okay, that's a bad thing to say. If there were a child of, say, somewhere between 8 and 12 that was extremely important to me, on whom I really wanted to lavish something, the contrast between what I would want to give that child and what that child might want is so great that I don't think I can cover the gap, and that hasn't happened before, and that feels really, really odd.
Last year I put up a little poster in my office, and in fact, if there's an entrepreneur out there that wants to make a fortune selling bumper stickers, let's say, Christmas happens.
I guess three things came up for me. We were in Detroit last holiday, Thanksgiving. It was my big family holiday, so we went to Greenfield Village, and if any of you do or do not know what that is, it's the village that was recreated, and Henry Ford was a bit of a history buff, although he was not an entrepreneur and always looking to the future. He was a huge history buff in wanting to retain information, and he created this whole village that's not just from his childhood, but he borrowed from Germany and England, and interestingly, they were gearing up for the Christmas season because they sort of shut down in between summer and the kids go back to school, and then they gear up for Christmas again, and they were getting all the kitchens ready. And I kept having to apologize to people saying, well, why isn't this a big deal? Because they said during this era, Christmas wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big holiday. Nobody really celebrated. It was just a dinner. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big festival. Maybe there was a tree if you were from Germany. Maybe there was candles if you were from this region, but it was just interesting to me. The other thing is, solstice was always a big deal for me. And it's interesting to me how many holidays and celebrations from around the world just sort of came crammed into a single time. Where, I just think it's interesting that you said, it's the darkest day, well, the shortest day, but it's the day we say, light, come back.
Yes.
Bring back the light. Bring back enlightenment. Bring back friendship, bring back family, bring back life. And it's interesting to me that we lose touch with the sense of, that's the whole point, is we want to bring life back to the planet, which is light, for some. So that was interesting. The second thing is, we constantly struggle. The boys have some of you know, my partner and I are raising two boys between the dual household. And the contrast between trying to take over their father's new toys, new houses, new this, and new that, and big emotional glitzy things. And
They come back to our house and it's Legos and the Frigo train set, and they just have very simple toys that they play with that are for their imagination. What they get from us is a paint set or, you know, simple things. And it's interesting to me that they get all excited and wound up and they're just for about a month. And I go over to the house and they're all on the floor in the basement. They come to our house and really all they want to do is play with those sets, that we just keep working on simple things and we don't give them huge presents. And the last thing was, for my family, they're all into spending doubles and doubles of money. They were very angry with me, even though my income has waxed and waned over the years, that when my income was on its highest, I didn't spend more. I still gave them the little tree with the seashells that I've been collecting all year long for the presents that I wanted to give my family. And it's interesting to me still, even though they're very disappointed and angry with me, when I go to their houses, I still see those little gifts all around the house. And I don't see the big outfit or the plate thing that people give, you know, that everybody knows that this thing about collecting Christmas plates and whatever. That was on the list. That was what? I didn't know this. But it was interesting to me to contrast. And when we went back there for Thanksgiving, we were so happy to go to Greenfield Village because it was such understated. But for my family, they were busy passing out presents. And we said, it's dirty. I haven't done it yet. So the contrast, and the interesting thing is the boys said, we like it here better. And Misha's comment was that too noisy. It's too much. Everybody's calling me everywhere. That's his comment for it, it's too big. And I like the way he said it. I want it quiet. I want it simple. I want it to be about family. I want to snuggle, is what he said. I want to snuggle. So that was a big comment that I
had to share. Well, I'm echoing Bob's and yours too, because to me I must be very light sensitive, because now I'm counting the days to the solstice and thinking, okay, we only have 2 more weeks and then it's going to be as dark as it's going to get. And I love the lights coming out, and I love the people who leave them off and light them every night until spring. Because I, you know, as I walk the dog at night, you know, it's just so wonderful to see all this light. And by February, I get really excited because I can read. By then, you can really tell that the days are getting longer. And as I'm driving out to ski patrol, which I'm not doing this year, but I really notice that when I get to sort of February, mid-February, that I'm driving out and it's dusk instead of dark. So I don't think it's a coincidence that all these things kind of come together. Now, and I was thinking too about the making things. Last year I did a wonderful job of really making a lot of presents. But I started at right after Christmas, and I worked all year long. And I did a pretty good job and I ran out of steam, so this year I didn't make anything. But I would put a plug for Nifty Gifty. I think it's a tradition that we started here at Prairie quite a number of years ago that I just really appreciate. Probably my fondest gifts, or many of my fondest gifts, are things that the kids have made in Nifty Gifty here. But I think that's a wonderful.
Is that today or next Sunday?
It's next Sunday. But 2 more comments and then we need to.
This was a discovery I made when I was at San Francisco visiting my grandchildren, great-granddaughter and my daughter. They're like a piece of family history. And I would urge you to look around your house and think of things that your grandparents made or meant something to them, and pass it on. Doesn't cost anything, and it's very much appreciated. I have about 10 Susan B. Anthony dollars that I'm going to give to my son, who has a collection of old coins.
that I'm sure he'll appreciate. And I have a crocheted bedspread that my mother made late in her life. She had planned to give one to all the children, you know, but she couldn't do it. But she did start making little doilies to put on, hang on Christmas trees. So I'm going to send the set that I have to my granddaughter, who likes things like that. She also says she likes, I brought her some glass buttons. You know, there are no more glass buttons being made. And she says she collects things like that. So think about that.
My most pleasant memory of Christmas while I was growing up was Christmas Eve. The Christmas tree was up, the lights were on, it was evening, and there was the blinking set and the non-blinking set, the colored lights, and I'd put my nightgown on, and I'd sit in the chair, and I'd watch the colors and lights on the ceiling, and I was very much at peace. It was about the only time of the year where I really felt this deep sense of peace, and also this anticipation, pleasant anticipation of whatever goodies I might be getting the next day. And it wasn't until I was, in my about 30 or so perhaps, that I saw my first tree with white candles lit, and it really is a stunning and exceptional experience. The other thing about gift giving, I have a very short gift list. I give gifts when I want to instead of because I'm told to. And years ago, probably about 25 years ago, I set a limit of $20 on a gift. Sometimes I might go up higher. It takes a lot more creativity, but the things are really appreciated, and you don't have to spend a lot to give something that means something to someone.
Another word for simple gifts. What the gift that I probably remember more than anything else I've gotten. When I first moved to Madison in 1969, I went to work. One of my co-workers, we became friendly. Her father had a dairy farm out in Dodgeville. And I wasn't expecting anything from this person. And the last day of work, she came into work, and she handed me a coffee mug that was filled with cream from the cow on the farm. And I thought that was one of the loveliest gifts, and that was a gift, and you all know how I love coffee. So I never had fresh cream right from the cow before.
Wow.
And that was such a thrilling thing to get for presents.
Anybody else?
Oh.
That should be the last.
Well, I hate to put the final word on it, but one of my current favorite moments of the whole year is about 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, early evening on Christmas Eve, when the frenzy has come to a complete peak and then dies and is gone. And there won't be a lot of car traffic that evening. There won't be hardly any the next day. And people will pretty much stay indoors. They won't go to the bowling alley or the movies or anywhere else, because for the most part, those places, for once, won't be out there with their glaring lights and their loud enticements. And people hardly know how to deal with their leisure time. It really is suddenly kind of a silent night, and people sort of look around and don't quite know how to deal with it, but it's kind of nice. And then all day the next day, it's pretty quiet, because the white tails start the next
day. Thank you.
Prairie Music at Christmas and the rest of the year. Now's the time that we would invite any visitors among us if they would like to let us know who they are and how they got here. Okay.
My name is Bob Gackenbach, and this is my wife, Victoria, and our two children, Zeb and Kelsey. We came from the Chicago area a few months ago. My wife and I were married at a Unitarian church and have been quasi members often. Trying to kind of get back into it.
Oh, very glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Other people trying to do it. Hi, Julie Thompson.
Hi, Henry.
And we go to a first assignment and it's getting too big.
Well, we're glad to have you.
Hi, I'm Carrie McDowell. This is my fiance, Eric Chester, and our great friend, Roger Fife.
Howdy.
And we kind of got here to the yellow pages, actually. But we're just kind of looking for a place to share our faith.
You're the first people who've ever said the yellow pages. Well, we're delighted to have you all here. And one of the nice things about Madison is that there's three churches and one can visit them all and sort of get a chance to select. And that they're all different, which is really fun.
And we can promise never to go too big, can't we?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, that's true. We are the good for the small area, for better or worse, it's going to be. Now it's time for prairie announcements, and I've got one, and that the board is meeting tomorrow at 7:30, and I hope to see all the board members there. Barbara Ralph, and it's nice to see Barbara looking better. Yes. I hear you.
And I hear Carl Thompson has pneumonia now.
Oh, really? Yeah. Didn't even prove that. Go ahead.
I have two announcements. The first is we are missing a black welcoming t-shirt size extra large.
Extra large.
This is extra large. That looks a little larger. The welcoming congregation t-shirts were ordered and paid for in advance, and 2 weeks ago some of them were brought here after service to be distributed, and we wonder if someone may have picked that black extra extra large t-shirt up by mistake or may have seen it somewhere and somehow gotten misplaced. So if anyone knows the whereabouts of it, they can contact me or Pat Watkins or Mike Reeves, for whom the t-shirt was ordered. The second announcement is, after the orientation session last Tuesday evening, I found a small amount of money in the street. So if anyone is missing a small amount of money, they can let me know and we'll see.
We're in very good shape as far as materials, volunteers, everything is going well, and I want to thank everybody who's volunteered to lead a project. My second announcement is, I don't know if anybody's seen the cover story of the Isthmus this week, the Allied Drive Head Start program, which is a program that is that we're doing a service project with and for, and also Martin Holt is featured pretty prominently in that article, so you might want to check it out.
9:30.
Oh,
good point. 9:30 for kids next week, not 10 o'clock.
There's a flyer that went out. All the kids in the RE program should be getting a flyer on that.
Good. And there's no choir rehearsal next week, because there's no accompanist in there. Also, the Holy for the Prairie Fire is in the little side room here, if anybody has anything to say. Pat.
Little announcement. One, I think I left here the other day a little canvas tote bag that said Savannah, Georgia on the printed on it, and a clipboard. I'm not sure, but I think I left it here. So if anybody seen anything like that, let me know. Secondly, the study group on the Jewish economic community is meeting right after prayer service. We said 11:45, and just in case you don't remember, you signed up for this. Rachel, Shirley, and Karen Gross, Bob Purvis, who has come in, and Bob Park and Jack Jollins, and we'll be at 11:45. And I have a third announcement, but I can't.
the next Sunday. That's terrible. It's bad. Next Sunday, the guests at your table boxes are due in, and Ruth Calden will be picking those up because Pat Cautley and I are doing the Art Institute next Sunday morning. And what we would like to have you do is, those of you who have those boxes, tear off the little tab that you fill in your name and address so forth, and write in the amount of money you're turning in. And there are memberships to UUSC that are associated with this. So for the children, youth, and college students and senior citizens, the membership is $10. So if you have a $10 or more, between $10 and say $25 in your box, you should make your check out to UUSC. And if if you have $25 in the box, that's for the adult membership, and you could do the same thing. And I mentioned, I think earlier, if anybody who's collected so much money that they have $60, that will be matched by the Shelter Island UU Society. So come next Sunday, turn in your boxes. If you have any questions, we will answer them for you when you get ready to turn your money in.
Okay, thanks, Pat. Now, I'd say people should be on time next week because there'll be a lot of parents here early. Right on time.
Okay. So we don't have a final song, but
can I say one very short thing? Sure. If you're in your car at 12:59, remember that our first prairie announcement is going to be on WHA AM at 12:59.
Oh, and A?
Today.
Also for our visitors, sometimes a group of people go out to Pizza Hut, and we'd love to have anybody join us who wants to. Orange and Katrina are going to close with two selections for hopefully rather than the one that's just in the prayer site, or in the
The first one is a French carol called Whence Is That Goodly Fragrance? An unusual title. I'm sure it's not better in French.
Do join us for talk.